Welcome back to the Fostering Conversation podcast presented by Welcome Home Youth Advocacy. Today we have Derek Lehman joining us, and we are excited to hear his story. So Mike, go ahead and kick us off.
Thanks so much, Brett. Derek, why don't you just take a second and introduce yourselves to the listeners.
My name is Derek Lehman. I'm from Wakarusa. We attend Wakarusa Missionary Church. I'm married to Kim. We have two daughters, Kennedy, who's 21, and Carrie, that is 18.
Super. So, Derek, why don't you kind of just take a moment and kind of explain your connection to the foster and adoptive community?
I was adopted at birth, and so that's most of my connection, is that I just have a heart for adoption. We never ended up actually adopting, although we did attempt to, and we did foster for a short period, maybe 10, 12 years ago.
So with being adopted, you just kind of want to share your adoption story with us. We had a little bit of a chance to talk about it before we got on the podcast today, and yeah.
I was, like I said, I was adopted at birth. It's kind of a weird story. I feel like I should ask more questions before I, where do you want me to start?
Wherever you feel comfortable starting.
Start from day one.
So apparently my folks couldn't have kids in the late 70s, and so they looked to adopt, and through word of mouth, basically, kind of a friend of a friend kind of thing, I came to be. They then, 2 years later, divorced, and I grew up in Chicago with my mom, and then made it back to Elkhart County, where I've lived most of my life. Mom's been married several times since then. Dad's been in Wakarusa, married for 30-some years. And so that's the short story. There's a lot of other rabbit trails in there, but that's the gist. Mm-hmm. In figuring out my story, I guess.
So how did you eventually learn that you were adopted, since you were adopted at birth? How did that come about?
Around the time that I was probably about six, just randomly in a conversation, I don't know that it was really pre-planned, my stepmom just kind of mentioned it. You know, one of these, like, you know you're adopted, right?
Oh, no.
Like, no, you know. Yeah. So then my adopted mom was a little upset. Like, she wanted to share that story with me, but I don't know that she ever really would have shared that with me.
So do you know what led to your bio parents giving you up, for adoption, and how that all came to be?
This is taken years to kind of unpack and figure out. Biological mom was married. They had a son, and eventually along the lines, she had an affair with a neighbor who was considerably older. He's my father. And because she was married and her husband didn't want this kid that wasn't his, I was placed for adoption. For some reason, their marriage didn't work out. Can't figure that one out. So then she was married again, and then she had another son. So I learned around the time that I was 17 from my adopted mom that I had two brothers. And she just kind of, once again, casual story, casual conversation. She says, you know you have two brothers, right? And I was like, yeah, these guys here playing on the floor. Like, I know them, you know. We live in the same house. And she said, no, you have two biological brothers. And so that really threw me for a loop, that I was the middle child of three boys. I was couldn't figure out, like, how do you adopt out the middle kid, not the oldest or the youngest? But it, you know, didn't learn until way later, until I actually found one of those brothers on MySpace of all places. This is how long ago
wild.
I found him. But I was telling Mike that Kim came downstairs at our old house, and I was sitting there at the front of the computer, just staring at the screen, and she says, what are you doing? I said, this guy's got the name of this brother that I'm looking for. I said, look at his dimple in his chin. And she was like, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you found him.
Yeah.
So we contacted him. I sent him a picture of our mom, and he was like, holy cow, that's my mom, you know?
Wow.
And so we met and exchanged some stories, but we haven't necessarily really kept in contact. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers it. Where the question really went. No, but
for sure. You're good.
What about the other brother?
So there was a younger brother also, and we've met him. He had kids around my girl's age, and so we hung out, you know, a couple times. Mm. But it's, I don't know. I've got a lot of family, and so I don't necessarily hang out with everybody all the time. But yeah, I did meet both of them, at least our maternal mm-hmm. brothers. Yeah.
And wow. So you kind of found out that you were adopted. You kind of figured out who your siblings were. Had you ever, then after you were adopted, had any contact with your biological parents? Were you ever, you know, interested in that? Did you ever want to learn more about them?
As a kid, once I learned that I was adopted, I didn't have that desire to meet biological parents. It was one of these they didn't want me, I don't want them kind mm-hmm. of mentalities. And so I was uninterested. Like I said, until I was 17, when I found out I had brothers, I was like, well, I've got no issues with them. They didn't place me for adoption. Mm-hmm. So I did have interest in meeting them. But it was just kind of searching online for the wrong names. Mm-hmm. My adoptive mom, like I said, I wasn't sure she would ever tell me I was adopted. So she's never been overly forthcoming with information. And so some of the information that I got was like, you know, from aunts, you know, that were like, no, that's not his last name at all. It's this. Mm. And I was like, oh, I've been going through the phone book looking at the wrong last names. 20 some years ago, you know, when the internet was in its infancy and mm-hmm. it was not just a Google search, it was literally flipping through the phone book, you know, calling all the Millers, which there's a lot of.
Yeah.
For sure. There's quite a few.
I'm never really sure in this context, like, what sort of names I can use, but
yeah.
If I...
That one's good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yoder, Miller.
Well, I just mean, like...
Burkholder.
Yeah. I literally would be a Miller.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild.
So, you kind of explained this a little bit ago when we met, but... You said your bio father was considerably older. I think that's a bit of an understatement. You said that if he were still alive, he'd be in his hundreds at this point?
Yeah, not his hundreds. That's that's ridiculous.
No, not like 300.
Around the time I found my older biological brother, our mother had already passed away. And so I missed meeting her, like I said, wasn't necessarily the goal by months. And but then through more research, I learned more about the maternal side. And then through a little more research, was trying to find my paternal side. And I ended up finding like what I thought was an uncle because he was in his 50s. Turns out he was my nephew. Mm. And he was able to provide me with a little bit of information. And so, yeah, I did find information about my biological father. He was born in 1921, and I had always heard that he was a little older or he was older than my mom, mm-hmm. But I had never really put together that, like, he was that much older than my mom. Yeah, he'd be 103. On his side, I have found that I had two biological brothers, and they're, like, well into their 70s. Wow. So I have brothers that are my older than my parents.
Yeah. Wow.
So once you found out you were adopted, you know, when that kind of set in, and did you ever have, I don't know how to put this, how to frame this question. Did you ever have any, you know, questions, resentments, things that you just were like, why did this happen? What led to this? What, you know, as a kid, like, that can be a confusing thing to find out. I mean, I knew I was adopted when I was adopted. Like, that was, obviously, I was 7 years old, so I knew what was happening. But to find that out after you've gone through, you know, a number of years of your life at that point, you have established this as your family, and then to find out that they're not actually your family, what was kind of, you know, what is your remembrance of those thoughts at that point?
I guess you don't know what's any different. And so this was my family. I didn't know any different. I didn't know these biological people at all. So I didn't have that memory. I don't know that I blocked it out, but I think I handled it well. I think I understood it well. And felt really, even as I got older and learned more about my biological family, I realized for as crazy as my family is, that I was definitely blessed, definitely in a much better situation than I could have been otherwise. So I don't know that I was ever really negative on the situation or resentful of the situation. It just was my situation, and so I just kind of, you know, embraced it is not really the right term, but just that was my normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I always, as a kid, you know, I just had questions, you know, as to, you know, where were my siblings and where, you know, where were my parents? And not that I kind of was in the same boat as you, where I didn't have a strong desire to meet my biological parents because I was like, you know, well, if they didn't care about me, you know, and the last interaction that I ever had with my biological mother was at my adoption hearing where she asked in court for more money for my family to adopt me. That was the last thing I'd ever heard my biological mother say, you know. So my desire to find out who that was as a I just didn't care, you know. But my biological sister, who was adopted at a, you know, a much younger age, she had that strong desire, you know, to figure out where we came from and what our bio family was like. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a danger in it because she ended up being pretty disappointed. You know, she found her mom, tried to talk to my mom, and our mom still wants nothing to do with us, you know, even at this point in our lives. So I think, you know, and you kind of alluded to this when we spoke earlier, you know, you said you wanted to meet your brothers because it's exciting to find out you have brothers. Like, oh man, I got brothers out there. And you're like, it was kind of a letdown in the sense of like, I just don't connect with them the way that I thought I would, you know, because you build this stuff up in your head, you know.
It's like the never meet your heroes kind of thing. Like you can have this mental picture of who somebody is. And then as a mental picture, it's one way. Mm-hmm. And you can leave it that way, or you can actually meet them and remove all doubt as to what that is. Yeah, we just have different interests, and I think they're good guys.
Yeah.
But it's, we just, you know, we're not going to hang out all the time. Mm-hmm. And actually, by mostly my fault, like we haven't hung out for a while. But yeah, that's on me for not reaching out, I guess. Like I think the finding them was very exciting. And then it was like, well, now what do I do? Now what do I do that I've got this more yeah. family? I was telling Mike that mom's been married several times, and so I have a lot of family.
Yeah.
My wife Kim is like, you are related to everyone, and I was like, yeah. Between both sides branching out, there's a lot, and I've over the course of time. I found out that I have, let me back up. So I was adopted. Parents were divorced. I've got two older stepsisters from my dad's side. My mom continued to adopt children. So even like when I was in high school, she was adopting younger children who are now, you know, probably into their 20s. Mm. So total between biological adopted, I've got 13 siblings, which doesn't compete with Mike, but it's close. And so, yeah, I've got a lot of family, and I haven't reached out as much as I probably should have.
Can I interject a little
bit?
Sure. Because I don't think I've even shared this with you, Mike. But both my parents passed away 5 years ago, and when my mom passed away, that would have been June of 2019. She had, prior to that, she passed away unexpectedly, and her birthday was the spring before that summer, and she wanted so badly to find more of her family. We didn't know why, but that was a desire that she had. And so for her birthday, we got her, my sister got her that Ancestry.com account, and she did it, and I didn't know anything about it. It was just kind of like, yeah, do your thing. That's fine. And anyway, she passes away a few months later, and we get a message on social media. Hey, I think your mom is my mom's mother, biological mother. And, you know, my siblings and I are like, what? and just to build context, I have a brother who's 22 years older than me. His dad, my mom had him when she was 19. She had me when she was 42. His dad went to war, came back addicted to drugs. They got a divorce. My mom remarried. So I have a brother who's 22 years older than me. And then there's a little bit of gap. A sister who's 7 years older, another sister who's 4 years older, and then I'm the baby. And it was just wild, like, to hear, like, that, and then to look at this image of the person who reached out, and he looks very similar to me. And it was like, this is wild. What is going on? My older brother knew and kept it a secret that we had a sister who was in her 40s, that between my older brother and my oldest sister, so there's 13 years there. If I did my math right, I think it's 13 years. What's 7 plus 13?
20.
Okay, 15 years there. Thank you. And anyway, he knew about our other sister, Rhonda, who my mom had gotten pregnant with a guy, and she had lived with my grandma and grandpa and my brother, Kelly. And my grandpa told her, you can't bring another child into this house. And so she was somewhat forced to put that baby up for adoption. And then she got remarried years later and had the rest of us. So you can imagine when this would have been my mom's grandson reached out, and there's a family picture of my brother, my sister, my other sister, and myself. And his mom is the only one not in that picture. And the question becomes, why did you choose to give her up and you kept the other four? There's a long story that goes with that. Anyway, we meet her, my sister, who's in her 40s, never heard of her in my life. My mom took that to the grave, and she looks identical to my mom. Identical. Like, could have been twins identical. Sounds like her. But she wasn't my family, and I struggled with that. Like, these were my siblings. I don't know you. And there was a lot of things going on in her life, some addictions and other things, and her family was reaching out because they wanted kind of us to wrap our arms around her and save her from that. My brother's approach was that way. We need to pull her out of this pit. We're her siblings biologically. And I was for that initially. And then some things just started to happen that weren't healthy. And it was easier for me to say, she's blood, but she's not our family. Now, her story is heartbreaking. And there's a reason mom took it to the grave. I imagine she felt a huge amount of guilt with that. We did learn later that mom had stayed in her life as a family friend for a number of years and would visit her weekly and hang out with the family, which I thought was good. But to go along with what you're talking about, Derek, there's this element of she's blood, but like, we don't have any interests. We don't have anything in common. Like, I grew up with these other people. And, you know, I have friends that I feel like are closer family than even, you know, this. And so that is a hard thing, because I almost feel guilty sometimes feeling that way, especially when my other siblings are like, it's our responsibility to care for our blood. And I don't feel that conviction in the same way. So anyway, kind of goes along with a little bit of what you were sharing.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I didn't know any of that, and that's, I mean, I'm trying not to get emotional. That's awesome. My older maternal brother, Mm-hmm. So he would have been 4 or 5 when I was born. When I found him, he said, I had this weird fuzzy memory that mom had another kid, but like there wasn't anybody here mm-hmm. at the house. And so it was kind of like, I just kind of put it away. Mm-hmm. That was nothing. And when I did find him, he reached out to our mother's best friend and said, hey, who's Derek Lehman? Mm. And the best friend says, you know, mom's been dead for 6 months now.
Yeah.
Best friend says, oh, he's your biological brother. Your mom had an affair with a guy. Like wow. She knew.
Yeah.
And had the information, and nobody ever said a word.
Yeah.
You know, it was there. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to hang out one time, I didn't tell Mike this story, I just remembered it, but went to hang out one time, and he had just these little totes of photos. Our mom had lots of dogs, mm-hmm. so just photos of dogs. And I'm flipping through photos of these kids growing up, and I'm like, oh, this is me. Yeah. This is me in the first grade. This is me in the hospital.
Wow.
You know, like, wild. And they would have had no idea
yeah.
who this baby photo was
right.
that was in their house. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just a random baby.
Similar, like mom had boxes of photos. Like apparently scrapbooking wasn't a thing. And so yeah, she just put them in cardboard boxes and they were in the attic or in a storage unit somewhere. And then, you know, anyway, after she had passed away, like we just went through some of them and we had so many conversations of, do you know who this is? We have no idea who this is. And who knows? Listener, you're going to hear some construction going on again at the church and that's going to happen for the next several months. But wild, man. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Well, that's such a, yeah, it's wild because, so, you know, like I said, we were taken in our family unit when I was 4. My brother was 6 and a half. You know, my sister below me was 2 and a half. And my youngest sister was a baby. And she was not told that she was adopted for years and years because they adopted her as a baby and they wanted her to think that, you know, that was her family. And I totally get that. And then, you know, to find them, my sister that's right below me really had a desire to seek us out as she got older because she was adopted by the couple that kind of got us out of the situation we were in. And, you know, so she was resentful towards her adopted parents because they split us up and didn't take all of us. So she really wanted to find her family. And, you know, connecting with her in my 30s, it's kind of like what you said, Brent. It was interesting because, like, yes, you're my sister. Yes, you know, we were connected when we were young, but I don't know you. I don't know who you are. I have no background about you. It's a little awkward trying to talk to you. Like, we've known each other for 35 years. It's a weird thing. And my youngest sister has always kind of kept us at arm's length. It seems like she has a hard time, you know, coming to terms with that she is adopted still and that she has this other family. And that it is kind of a weird thing. It's a very odd thing to kind of wrap your head around because it's not the quote unquote normal. It's not what a normal family unit looks like. And I think we're all kind of adverse to accepting that about ourselves, you know, that we're not the norm. But, so Derek, when you were trying to figure out, you know, who your family was and, you know, trying to figure out your biological stuff, was your adoptive family any help in that? Were they forthcoming with information for you, or was it like a battle to get that info? Or do you feel like you were fighting against the current with that?
Mom has never been very forthcoming with any information. Her sisters, there was a Thanksgiving where one of her sisters said, oh, no, that's not his last name. His last name is this. Like, I was a school bus driver. He went to Goshen. I was like, holy cow, I didn't know any of this. It was a very, very informational Thanksgiving.
what a holiday.
And my dad, I don't know if he really, I don't want to say he's not forthcoming, but I don't know that he knew. Like, I don't think he had near the information that my mom had. And so, so I did, you know, there's things that I'll ask him and he's like, I really just don't know. And I don't feel like he's holding back. He just doesn't, you know, sometimes guys just don't have a full grasp on the situation or whatever, or
we know what we need to know.
Yeah. We don't keep track of numbers and yeah. things like that.
Yeah.
I asked him recently, like, how long were you guys married? And he was like, I don't know, probably from like 77 to 81. Like it wasn't like, it was kind of.
Didn't know the exact dates.
Somewhere in here. Yeah. And I realized that was, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, but I was still like, huh, I feel like I would know that. But
yeah.
So yeah, a little bit of it was difficult because it didn't have a lot to work with. And yeah, like I said, mom wasn't real forthcoming with information. So yeah, it was a lot of just digging around on my own. To play off of what Brant was saying about the ancestry and me or whatever, got one of those one year as a birthday gift from Kim, and have yet to find any like really close relatives. But being that my biological dad has kids much older than me and apparently spent time between here and Arizona most of his life is what I've learned, I keep expecting just another random sibling to pop up somewhere out west, you know, and be like, oh, here's another sister. Here's number 14.
Yeah,
so I do. I get those emails where they're like, here's your fifth, third cousin. But I keep waiting for one of them to be like, here's your sister or something like that.
Wow.
So you said, you know, that you're I just to understand that you were, you know, a byproduct of, you know, an affair that wasn't wanted. The dad really didn't want a child. He was older and he was at a place where it was just like, well, you know, I don't want to deal with that. And so, and then you had explained it was your adopted grandmother that kind of knew the family in a way. And just how that, it's just so crazy how that works and how those connections are made and how you got to where you were.
Trying to explain this without a whiteboard is difficult.
Man, but, I love whiteboards too.
I know, they're the best. I have friends that I've been friends with for 25 years, and they're still like, now hang on. You know, who's this person again? Mm-hmm. But my adopted grandmother was adopting some children. So they were, they became my aunts and uncle, or my aunt and uncle, but they're, they would have been in their junior high or elementary age. And from a lady, and that lady, through apparently conversation, knew that my mom couldn't have children. So when that lady's husband's wife became pregnant with a child that he didn't want because it wasn't his, she contacted my grandmother and basically said, hey, does your daughter still wanting to adopt? So my adoption story, I guess that wasn't so bad.
No,
it felt worse earlier.
Yeah, no, it's not so bad.
I'm glad we practiced. that it was all word of mouth. And I think when Kim and I thought we were going to adopt, I told Mike earlier that we kind of had an agreement with our, you know, within our home, that if we have two girls, we'll adopt a boy. And if we have two boys, we'll adopt a girl. Then we ended up with two girls. And, well, this must be the Lord's will. We're going to adopt. And so we attempted that. And it did not go the way we thought it would. Where was I going with that train of thought? I lost my own train of thought.
That happens to me all the time, Derek.
Literally gone. what was the question again?
Oh, shoot. You were talking about your adoption didn't go as planned.
Exactly.
There you go.
I think mentally I thought like, oh, word of mouth, this is just going to happen. Like I happened apparently so easily that we're just going to put out the word that we're, you know, here's this Christian family in Wakarusa who wants to adopt a kid and it's just going to be easy. And it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And it was really heartbreaking. I told Mike that we had sat down for a dinner with a lady who had picked us from our portfolio. I'm jumping ahead here a little bit, but she said, no, you guys are it. I want you guys to adopt my son, and I want Kim to be in the delivery room. And I left that Denny's like, I'm going to have a son. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then she decided that's not what she wanted anymore, and she, like, ghosted us. And so I grieved that like a miscarriage. Yeah. Like, that kid's 14. He's still alive in Northern, you know, Gary, Indiana, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I really struggled with that for a while. Like, huh? I really thought this was the plan, and it's not the plan. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's such a crazy thing. When you had told me that, I had no idea that you guys had even thought about adoption at any point. I mean, I, you know, why would I? But to know that, you know, it's just such a heartbreaking thing to know that that's where you were. It was, you know, you thought it was set in stone. You thought this was going to happen. Like, this is, you know, and you had shared with me that you had, you'd told some people that this was going to happen. And then so, you know, basically get ghosted by somebody and just kind of drop off the face of the earth and then randomly find out that this child was born. And, you know, you said you feel kind of dumb grieving that, but that is something you would have to grieve because your heart gets to a place where you're like, okay, I'm going to be a dad to a boy and I'm ready to do this. And yeah, then that's totally pulled out from under you.
Yeah. We were, you know, like you do, you prepare a space. We were, mm-hmm. you know, building cribs and getting areas ready. And it was one of these things like the adoption agency said, well, if you want to re-up, you know, for another year, you know, we can keep your portfolio on. And I was like, we talked about it and we're like, one, I don't know that we can go through that again. Two, we were blessed with a couple from Epic who were successful, but they were married a little bit later in life. And they said, hey, we want to help you guys adopt. We want to pay for this. And so I felt bad spending more of their money, but also like they said, you know, we're at a place where we can afford to do this, but we're too old to do this now. And we want to bless you guys. And I was like, oh, fantastic. Oh, by the way, Epic is a church that we were married here at Walker Ridge Missionary Church. We went to a church plant in Mishawaka, Epic Church for 10 years. And, that's, you know, where we met these folks.
Mm-hmm. So, kind of after that all happened and moving forward, I know we kind of jumped at our story, but that's okay. You guys then have a fostering story as well. Do you kind of want to tell us a little bit about that and how that all came to be and what led you guys down that path?
You want the full crazy story?
Yeah, yes, for sure.
Please. Because our adoption hadn't gone well and ended, we'd moved on, and I got a text message.
Gotcha.
That says, hey, according to paperwork in Michigan, you are siblings to this gentleman here, and he is having some trouble, and you could take in his son, and this would be an easy adoption for you.
What?
And I just stared at that text like, how do you text that to someone?
And who was the text from?
It's from my mother.
Oh, wild.
And I asked Kim, like, what do you do with that? And Kim said, I don't know that we can do anything with that. And so we're both at work. And I kid you not, maybe not even a half an hour goes by. And I'm like, we have to do something with this, right? Like, right? She's like, yeah. So we tell them, go ahead, bring him. We'll take him in as a kinship type thing. So my mom and this child's mother bring him to our home, and they eventually leave. We, you know, get him cleaned up. We're, you know, getting him ready. We really, this was all in the course of one day. So we don't really have a lot of stuff ready for him. Kim went to buy a car seat. I gave him a bath. Some friends are going to watch him the next morning while we're at work, and I get a call from Michigan CPS, or I don't even know, and they basically say, hey, I understand that you have this child. And I said, yep. And they said, we need him back. And I said, why? And they said, because he's been kidnapped. And you,
oh my word,
you have him illegally. And I said, no, I don't. I was told that this would be fine. Yeah, that's not true at all. Turns out, yeah, he was brought to us under false pretenses. And I said, well, what if we don't return him? And they said, well, we'll just bring the authorities to get him. And I said, that's not a problem. You just come get him. We don't want any issue. We're trying to do the right thing here. We're not trying to break the law here.
Yeah.
So they came and took him back to Michigan.
How old?
He was probably 5-6 months, give or take. Little guy. Yeah. And so he was placed in the foster care system in Michigan. Well, now that we've had him for 18 hours, now we're like gung-ho to, as quickly as possible, finish all of the actual foster care paperwork we need to do. So Kim and I are driving to like Michigan City, because on Thursday they've got a class that we need, and it's not available in Elkhart County for another 4 months. You know, we're making all these things we can do as quickly as we can. And it still took 8-9 months to get through all of this.
Oh, my word.
To get him back. But we went through all of the correct paperwork, all the correct courses, fingerprinting and all that jazz, just to get him back. And so when he came back to us, he was probably 14 months. I wrote some of this down, but it's in my phone. He was probably 14 months, give or take, but was nonverbal, was not walking. It looked like he had just been fed a lot. He was kind of a heavy kid. And so by the we had a babysitter that actually worked with him, and she was like, I've been trying to talk to him with some sign language. And we're like, yeah, good luck, you know. And we're sitting around a campfire one evening, and he signed more. And I was like, oh, my goodness, that's working.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, buddy, you can have another marshmallow. That really blew our minds. But so that was a really bright point. Our girls were probably I really should just look it up, so I'm not guessing. But the big thing that happened in that is that while we had him, CPS said, hey, mom's pregnant again. Would you take the next sibling? And we said, maybe. And they said, don't worry about it. It probably won't be a big deal. She probably won't be removed. So we didn't worry about it. And then a few days before she was born, Kim gets a call. Hey, do you guys have a space ready for baby sister? And we said, no, because you told us not to worry about it. And you may want to get a space around just in case. So Kim is literally on a Tuesday sitting outside the Walmart waiting for a call to go in and buy a car seat to bring this baby home from the hospital because she's not sure if that's going to happen.
No.
And so they call and say, hey, yeah, we need you to come home, come to Michigan, pick up the baby, and bring her home from the hospital. So we brought baby sister home from the hospital, added them to our family. And our big rub with that whole situation is this was like a family kinship thing. And so they wanted us to facilitate a lot of the visitation where, like I said, I don't know them.
Yeah.
That we're related because my mom adopted him also.
Yeah.
Well after I was out of the house. And so we're not family, like you said.
Yeah.
And so That was really difficult to spend every Saturday driving to Michigan to let this kid spend 3 hours in his parents' living room and watch them undo all the things we had tried to work on all week, you know, and then bring him home and clean him back up again and start over. So that was really hard for us, and we finally just told Michigan, like CPS or
It's CPS or DCS.
DCS, whatever.
Called Michigan.
And we basically told them, like, we can't do this anymore. Like, if y'all want to come get him and take him for visitation, that's great, but us sitting in their living room for 3 hours is super difficult. And we've also got two kids at home.
Yeah.
So eventually we were able to get them to handle that on their own. But, we probably only had them for 6 months. It wasn't a long placement. And when reunification did happen with mom and dad, they had gone through all their courses and prerequisites for getting their children back. Reunification was apparently like it was the goal, and that was our goal going in the whole time. Like if that didn't happen, I would have gladly adopted CJ. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the goal. The goal was reunification, and so when that happened, we were like, great, and we put all their stuff away. You know, we reclaimed that room, and 3 months later, we get a call from Michigan again, like, hey, can you take these kids back in? And we basically said, like, no, we can't be a safety net for mom and dad for forever. They need to figure out how to be a family or figure out how to be parents.
Yeah.
And we can't continue to take their kids in every 3 months. So it was really heartbreaking, but we kind of voted with our girls who were, you know, in maybe elementary, lower junior high, you know, like, what do you guys want to do here? And they were like, yeah, that's not good. We're not sure we'll ever get grandkids. Cause our girls were so little and they were like, man, kids are really difficult. We're like, yeah, you know, you're not wrong. I do think they're coming around a little bit, but
yeah, man, that story almost makes you angry.
Yeah.
Like the system is so messed up.
Yeah. And that, you know, and me and Derek spoke about it a little bit when we met earlier. That's the tough thing with the push for reunification. And I'm all for reunification. I think it's great. But the parents, the bio parents, have to be at a place where they're ready, and you know they're ready. The hard thing is for when kids go back, and then, like Derek said, a couple months later, DCS wants to pull them back out. You know, you are just throwing these kids' lives into chaos constantly when that's happening. You know, and it's one of those things that I think I've mentioned before. The states that focus on permanent placement have a much lower rate of kids in foster care than the states that focus on reunification, just because I think sometimes kids are rushed back before the parents are ready, you know. And it would be heartbreaking, you know, to have these little kids in your home and they're in your life and you're trying to take care of them and you're trying to do what's best. And then you kind of, when they're taken away and given back to bio parents, you there again, it's a grieving process. You grieve losing that child because you love that child. You poured yourself into that child. And then a couple months later, you hear, well, it's not going good. Can you take them back? And to open yourself up to that again and to try to go through that again, I can't even imagine what that would be like. That's just crazy. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that with us. That's just, you know, not, you know, we try to speak to the positives of foster care, but not everything in foster care is pretty. There's some ugly stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. It's not always the easiest thing. And that's why you need the community of people around you to support you and to help you through those tough times, because there's a lot of tough stuff that people deal with. And to go through it on your own and not have anybody to bounce that frustration and hurt off of, to, and then to get isolated with that, is such a hard thing and such a difficult thing.
We did have a really good support system with our church at the time was Epic, and so there were folks that were really very like helpful to us,
yeah.
And really like loved on those kids, and to see them, like, you know, be happy to see them and interact with them, that was great. I can think back of times where just you know, hanging out at the fair with people and them interacting and hanging out and you know, not speaking in because they were so little, but like spending time with those kids and loving on those kids. I think it was a good time for us overall, but there were just a lot of like small frustrations. And Kim often says, my wife often says, you know, if it were just bringing these kids into your home and then being a part of your family, that's one thing, but there's so many extra steps, you know, extra appointments, extra, you got to go to the dentist, you got to go to the doctor, you got to fill out this paperwork. You know, he fell down, he's got a bruise. Well, he's 2 years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids get bruises, but yeah. Now I've got to document, like if it was my own kid, you kiss it and you move on.
Yeah.
It's a foster kid. You got to document where that bruise came from. And I understand why those things happen, you know, why those paperwork is
in place. Yeah. And
needed.
Yeah.
But also it's just like, if it was just bringing the kids in and making them part of your family, that's one thing, but it's sometimes just more difficult than, it's easier said than done.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, I think that's something when we had Josh and Tammy Fisher on, that's something they spoke about a lot, was just the amount of appointments, the amount of things that you have to do with these kids. You know, they had a sibling group and two little kids. And so they had two meetings each week with each bio parent separately. They had counselor meetings and caseworker meetings, and like just the amount of stuff that you have to do for these kids on top of your normal life, especially if you have biological kids in the home that you need to take care of. It's just, it's a little overwhelming. I totally get it. So it's been interesting to, Derek, hear your story and have you share that. I think it's amazing. And you know, being involved in that space, you know, I've been very grateful to hear that you know, have kind of taken an interest in listening to our podcast and just kind of what we've done or what we're doing. What has been, you know, something that has surprised you the most that you've learned, kind of now learning about foster care and what's going on in our country, even though you were involved in that space at one point that you hadn't known previously?
I don't remember exactly which podcast it was. It might have been with the R-Knots, but you mentioned that, like, 12% of kids end up in the foster care system. And I think I was literally running past the church. I don't normally listen to podcasts, but I was out for a jog and I was listening to podcasts and I was like, I literally out loud was like, what? Like 12%, that seems like an incredible number. But I actually then questioned Mike on it when he came to speak at our Sunday school class. Like, is that real? Like, was that a misspeak? And he was like, nope, that's exactly the statistic. So that really blew my mind. Like I think many people think it's a very small, you know, 1 or 2%. And there's not that many kids out there that need to be placed in foster care, right? Yeah. 12%, that's an incredible number.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I'm remembering right, there's about 75 million kids in the U.S. under the age of 18. So at 12%, you're looking at about, before the age of 18, 8 million kids will hit the foster care system at some point in their childhood, which is just crazy. So it affects a lot of people. It touches a lot of people's lives. Mm. Yeah. Derek, I appreciate you so much. Your story is just, yeah. It's funny when we were setting up this podcast and going through the discussion of having you on, you were like, I just don't find my story all that interesting. And and it's funny because I say the same thing to people. I'm like, my life's not that crazy. There's nothing. But it's because I lived it. It was my life. And then when people on the outside hear it, they're like, oh, my gosh. So I think your story is really important. And I think there's a lot of people that go through that type of stuff. And they're like, man, nobody else has ever gone down this path. No one else has ever seen those sort of things. And I just think it's really, really amazing that you were willing to come and share and speak to all that stuff. So thank you so much for being on today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. A pastor once told me, there is no such thing as a perfect family. But in that, I think we can be encouraged that God can use the messiness of this life and the schemes of the evil one for good and his glory. Our true family and identity is found in the person of Jesus Christ. He's adopted us into his family, and we hold on to that gift as we go about our day-to-day here on earth. Until next time, we pray that God blesses you in the days ahead.